Closure, Part 3. The epigraph is from a Jimmy Cliff song. Sitting here in limbo, waiting for the dice to roll. Sitting here in limbo, got some time to search my soul. Well, they're putting up resistance, but I know that my faith will lead me on. About 10 days ago, in the midst of a Zoom conversation with that same friend, we started talking offhandedly about online dating practices. I can't remember why. It seemed, at the moment, an utterly innocuous set of exchange, animated by her vague suggestion that this might be a possible alternative for one or the other of us. I told her that about 3 years ago, at the suggestion of another friend who met his now wife that way, I had joined one of those sites briefly. I had no photo or profile prepared, so I just put in my first name and age and started scrolling through the photos of the women, roughly in my age bracket. I did this for maybe 20 minutes, figuring, hoping I'd get to the end of that pool. I started going faster and faster to reach that goal. I must have seen many hundreds of these images. Instead of being uplifted by this deep pool of potential partners, it was depressing to me, imagining a culture like ours that produces, and I mean that in the same sense that capitalism means it, this commodity as one expression of its profound dysfunction in relation to love, intimacy, and community. There could have been many more thousands of these images in the pool. Maybe it was endless, new ones arriving faster than anyone could scroll. All of these lovely-looking people looking for love, or at least some semblance of it, in, I'm sure, a comparably endless sea of men like me setting forth to sink, swim with them, which made it doubly depressing to me. I signed off and went to sleep. By the next morning, I had generated several inquiries based solely on my first name and age, which I found triply depressing. I closed my account, having managed to make it through about half a day in that arena. I told her that at least part of my incapacity to continue had to do with my feeling so vulnerable at that juncture in my life. It was almost intolerable, potentially debilitating, to imagine having to reject even one of these women, or have any one of them reject me. So actually going on a date that might have that as an outcome was out of the question. This incapacity of mine felt vaguely like a weakness or a failure. Vulnerability often takes on that valence in our culture, at least for men. One I should be resilient enough to overcome. A source of the complementarily vague sense of shame American culture always induces in those who don't quite fit the social norms. Trying to compress and contain what are clearly endemic communal inequities into the tiny confines of isolated individuals. Using such shame-blaming in all kinds of ways to avoid having to think about changing, God forbid, our shared dysfunctional systems. I woke up the morning after our talk with a made-up mind as crystal clear as it ever gets to me, my unremembered dreams likely having worked out all this invisibly for me. Not only would I not take this initiative, not only was every last shred of shame vanquished, but I had, during that night, decided I was done entirely with all processes of trying actively to enlarge my social universe. I figured that whatever was going to happen without my intervention, so why stress over it? I walked at Woodard Bay that day, too, sat for a while on a bench down at the point. All of this firming itself up incontrovertibly. I was, I knew, done, done, done with all of that forced social hocus-pocus. Aloneness looked from that vantage point as beautiful as the scene I was gazing on. All that sun-spangled water, indomitable greenery burgeoning at its fringes, nest-building birds flying to and fro, endless blue skies fruitful with clouds. It was exactly where and how I wanted to live now, fully socialized in this community that welcomed me. A few days later, I was having another conversation with this friend about self-change, and for reasons I can't remember, she started talking about inner resistance, the kind that arises for cultural, social, psychological, or temperamental reasons and inhibits personal progress toward change. Because we had already been speaking in the discourse of physics, I began talking about resistance in an electrical sense, specifically the sorts of conductors that put up more or less resistance to the passage of electrons from point A to point B, the hows and whys of that. The best among these are the precious metals, silver and gold especially. With copper up there among them, fortunately, or we wouldn't be able to afford to wire our homes. In any case, my fundamental argument was that if you want to diminish or overcome internal resistance, spend a few bucks to upgrade on the periodic table of self-inquiry. I've been thinking in the meantime about how this term might apply to my current transition. Thus, the lines from Jimmy Cliff's song, how perceived inadequacies in relation to cultural norms generate that vague sense of shame, one that puts up a lot of resistance, not only to progress, but even to an awareness that there's a problem. A lot like limbo, which in the Catholic tradition is where unbaptized innocents, especially children, are sent to spend eternity. A fairly nice place, they say, no fire and brimstone, but not heaven, of which those there remain fully unaware. What a cruel and stupid concept that is. My sitting on the bench at the point at Woodard Bay that morning felt in the moment like finally getting out of limbo. Some more intelligent power finally realizing that withholding heaven was a pretty creepy thing to do. Except in this case, I was both the penalized innocent and the higher power who released him. That's my connection to the faith part of Cliff's argument. And since then, I have led myself on.